morning, everybody. Welcome back. It's Maryland Morning. I'm Tom Hall. Glad you're with us on this beautiful Friday morning. The Peabody Institute of the Johns Hopkins University has a new dean. Fred Bronstein began his tenure as Peabody's head honcho in June. He comes to the revered music school from the world of professional orchestras. He was the president and CEO of the St. Louis Symphony for 6 years, having held similar posts with orchestras in Omaha and Dallas. He takes the helm of the country's oldest music conservatory at a crucial time for American orchestras and the schools that train their players. This weekend, an organization called Future Symphony is holding a conference to discuss how orchestras can reclaim their place in American culture and how they can shape a vision for classical musicians that allows them to thrive in today's cultural climate. This is something that Fred Bronstein has thought a lot about, and I'm glad that he's joining me this morning here in Studio A. How you doing?
I'm good, Tom. Nice to be here.
Good to have you here, and welcome to town.
Thank you.
So you and I were in music school right around the same time, as a matter of fact. And, you know, back in those days when we're studying to get our music degrees, we're sort of dreaming, you know, can we actually make a living in this business? Can we actually do this? And so now you're heading up an institution that has a whole bunch of kids, 600 of them or so, who were thinking the same things that you and I were thinking back in, when we were in music school in the late 70s. Right. So what are the challenges facing those kids, and how do those challenges differ for them than they were for you and me?
That's a great question. And I think there are some challenges that are similar in the sense that I think it's always been a field that is highly competitive, and that there are, you know, just way more people than there are spots, you know, and whether it's orchestras or whatever you're talking about. So I think it's in some ways what's wonderful is that I think the opportunities, because of the way the world has changed, in many ways there are many more opportunities, but I think you have to think about it differently. And I think artists that are coming out of schools and folks that train those artists have to think about it differently. People are going into a world where I think that, you know, you have to be the master of your instrument. That is first and foremost. But it's, you know, I always tell people, it's not enough anymore. You've got to be an advocate for what you do. You have to be an educator. You have to have a sense of community connectivity. You've got to be able to, you're in the audience development business, and you've got to figure out a way to find your audience. And I think that and I think that's enormously exciting, but I think the challenge is for schools like Peabody and other music schools is, how do you prepare people for that? How do you get them ready to be great players, but also to be really great musical citizens as well, which is so important today?
Yeah, and that is a challenge. Mm-hmm. Andy Balio, the principal trumpet player for the Baltimore Symphony, started this thing called the Future Symphony Institute, mm-hmm. and he's been doing some thinking, he and many others, about this very issue of audience development, mm-hmm. and getting people connected to classical music and connecting classical music organizations to the communities in which they work. You're going to be hosting a symposium that's similar about the future of music conservatories next month on the 21st. I mean, I think everybody agrees that the world is changing for mm-hmm. orchestras and opera companies and choruses. So how does musical education need to change then to adapt?
Well, I mean, I think what you have to do is you have to infuse, I believe you have to infuse into your training. And I think it's possible to wrap it into the actual work that you're doing as a performer. And I'll give you an example. You know, it seems to me that it would make sense to have, if you're a conservatory, to have a chamber music series that is completely student run, that's programmed by the students, that is budgeted by the students, that is promoted by the students, that they have to market it. They have to be the operational folks, or they have to learn how to do everything, and they're playing as well. And I think if you think about it like that, then I think, you know, they're faced with learning to do certain things and understanding, what do we have to do to make this successful? It's not just about a great performance. It's about a lot more than that. So I think thinking a little more creatively about how we weave that into the kind of work they're doing anyway in mm-hmm. in their day-to-day lives, I think is really important. The other, I think, enormous opportunity that Peabody has, and I call it one of our real competitive edges, and I don't yet believe we've totally really leveraged this, is the relationship with Hopkins. I mean, if you think about it,
Yeah, which not every music conservatory has.
No, I mean,
Juilliard and Curtis and New England Conservatory, they're not affiliated with other larger umbrella
organizations. That's exactly right. And particularly when you take a university at that level, this is a world-renowned university, you take Peabody, which is a great brand in music education, and you put those things together, that has the potential to, I'd like to tell people, we really have the potential, I think, to own the whole interdisciplinary space of music and other subject areas. You know, we do some of that, but it's still a little bit on the periphery. And I'd like to see us really, really build on that and really leverage that, because I think it's something unique to Hopkins and to Peabody. The other piece in all of this is the community piece. And this comes back to the training of students, because I think that, and I don't know the conservatories today necessarily have thought of themselves this way, but again, I think we're in the audience development business. So I think the relationship with the community, the partnerships, I think is really important. And then how we train people and how we give our students the experience to be in the community and to be working in the community, I think is equally important. So to me, it's, you know, the future of Peabody, it is a little bit analogous, I think, to an orchestra in this sense. I believe that the orchestras that are thriving most are those that they understand that their core business is classical music, but they have surrounded that core business with all kinds of series, with education, with community. And I think in a sense, a school like Peabody needs to do the same thing, understanding our core business as the conservatory and continue to raise the level of that, but surrounding it with all of the work we can do with Hopkins, with the community, online. I mean, there are a lot of things that we can do to project the brand of the Peabody Institute and support what it's known for, which is, of course, the conservatory and the prep.
On 88.1, it's Maryland Morning with Sheila Cast. I'm Tom Hall. My guest this morning, Fred Bronstein. He's the new dean of the Peabody Institute of the Johns Hopkins University. One of the fellows that's going to be on the panel that you're convening in October is Jesse Rosen, who's the head of the League of American Symphony Orchestras. It's a professional association of symphonies across the United States. And he has said more than once that it's not about the concerts anymore, meaning that orchestras have to be, as you're indicating, you know, much broader. But if it's not about the concerts, then, who are the orchestras supposed to be hiring? Are they supposed to be hiring traditionally the kind of people they traditionally hired, which are the people who play better than anybody else, you know, beat out all the rest of the people in the auditions, or are they hiring people with a broader skill set?
That's a really interesting question. So, of course, I ran the St. Louis Symphony for 6.5 years, and before that, the Dallas Symphony. And I can tell you, St. Louis and the St. Louis Symphony, and I think this is true of the Baltimore Symphony as well, there's an increasing emphasis on the role of the musicians in the community, whether it's in the media or whether it's teaching or, you know, in the schools, whatever it is. And I would actually say that I believe that although today the process is still a traditional audition process, I'm willing to bet you that within the next 10 to 15 to 20 years, going into a major, I'm talking about the major orchestras now, not even regional orchestras, major orchestras, that part of that process will be about doing these other things. And in fact, sort of unofficially, it already is, because one of the things you're looking at when people come in is how do they fit in? How are they going to interact? How are they like in this culture where we're doing these things? And I believe it will in time become part of the audition process, because it is true that it's becoming an increasingly important part of the mission of the organization. So again, coming back to Peabody and how we get our folks ready for that is a really critical question.
Let me read you a quote from Time magazine. It says, as a group, the symphony orchestras of the United States are unsurpassed in quality by those of any other nation in the world, yet today they are in trouble. Loud, unavoidable, cymbal-crashing financial trouble. That's Time magazine, 1969.
Yeah.
So for our entire lifetimes, yours and mine, you know, that people have been predicting the demise of the American Symphony Orchestra.
I actually don't believe that. I actually am very optimistic about it, in fact, and I'm very optimistic about music. But what I do think is that, because you're right, some of these things, they come, and they've been going on for years. But I think what has happened, if you look at going back to 1969, and you look at what orchestras are doing today compared to what they were doing then, it has changed and it is evolving. And I think that evolution is addressing what people know to be the need that is out there. There are different audiences for different kinds of things. And so it's like any other business. What you have to do in your business model is find product that meets the needs of your audience and not is just driven in by your own internal needs. And I think that was the revelation for orchestras. And frankly, I think that needs to be the same revelation, I believe, for conservatories. Mm-hmm. And so that's the direction I'd like to see us move in as well.
Because it's unavoidable to take a look at what's going on around the country and see that, in fact, orchestras really are in trouble in a lot of places. I mean, the Minnesota Orchestra was on strike for an entire season last year. The Nashville Symphony came right up to the edge of closing its doors before they were saved, at least temporarily. The Philadelphia Orchestra, one of the big five orchestras, in Chapter 11 bankruptcy mm-hmm. for a while, and they have now since emerged out of that. You know, when we talk about Andy Balio's conference this weekend or your symposium about the future of conservatories, what is the future of the American Symphony? I mean, is the relationship between the orchestras and classical music presenters in general really going to change fundamentally with its audience?
I think the relationship is about creating, I believe, seeing different segments of your audience and creating different offerings and different products, if you will, for those audiences. So, you know, whether it's a presentation series you do or a popular series or jazz in your orchestra classical series or your education component or your community component, I think people are also looking, and this is, I think, important, what I think audiences, both those in the know and those that are just coming to it for the first time, crave is interaction. They want to be on the inside of the experience, I think. So to the extent that you can connect with people, again, it comes back to how artists connect with people. I think that's critical. And so, you know, in my mind, training people for that is important. If you're playing in an orchestra, having that sense that the audience wants to know you, wants to interact with you, wants to talk to the artist, wants to be inside of what's happening. I think that's everybody wants to feel part of something, I think. Isn't that, it's funny, in this world that has become so global and so spread, people want to be part of something and they want to be on the inside of something.
Yeah, Andy Balio in the Future Symphony Conference this weekend, they're going to bring in some folks who are good at branding and marketing. Is it a matter of branding and marketing for orchestras? You know, I'm interested that, and of course I've been intimately involved in marketing and branding with the Baltimore Choral Arts Society for, you know, more than 30 years. But it's interesting to me the words we use, the rhetoric we use, you know, excitement, passion, power, all that kind of stuff. Excitement, you know what excitement is? Excitement is Derek Jeter standing at the plate for his last at-bat in Yankee Stadium. And when, you know, hitting a single that wins the game in the bottom of the ninth inning, that's exciting. I'm not so sure a performance of Bolero is as exciting as that on that same kind of level. Yet it seems that we in the classical music business try to sell it as if it were.
I don't know. You know, I used to tell people that when we talked about our brand in St. Louis, what we talked about was that whatever you're coming for, whether you're coming to see the Pirates of the Caribbean with the orchestra playing or a Mahler symphony or a contemporary, whatever you were coming to see, you would not leave the same way you came in. The experience was such, hearing that orchestra, which is a great orchestra, in a hall like that, you would not leave the same way you came in. And in that sense, even for those 2 hours, something changes. And I think that's the power of live performance. And that's what's thrilling. And I don't think that's changed. I think that when you ask about branding and marketing, I think it's a little bit of a misnomer because I think unless your product, it has to be genuine. People know what's genuine and what isn't genuine.
Sure.
So I think marketing and branding to me is doing nothing but projecting what is genuine to you. So if you have a strong commitment in the community and education and in the music you're playing, that's what has to be support. That's what the brand has to support. And I think when you get away from that, that's a problem, actually.
Fred Bronstein is the new dean of the Peabody Institute of the Johns Hopkins University. Peabody has lots of events that take place at various venues at the school throughout the year. Their season kicks off tomorrow night when the Yale Gordon Concerto competition winner Mariana Previskova plays with the Peabody Symphony Orchestra. On Tuesday night, the composer Judah Adachi will present a concert organized around bass lines that undergird songs of love and lament through 5 centuries of Western music. Fred Bronstein, good to see you. Thanks so much, and good luck at the Peabody.
Thanks, Tom.
The conference about what lies ahead for symphony orchestras begins tomorrow at the University of Baltimore. It's been organized by the Future Symphony Institute, the brainchild of Andy Balio, the principal trumpet player in the Baltimore Symphony Orchestra. Come to WIPR.org/Maryland Morning for links to information about the conference and all the events at Peabody. Maryland Morning is a original production of Your Public Radio, WIPR in Baltimore. Matt Purdy and Jamila Kay produce the show. Nathan Sterner directs and engineers. Payam Agagasam and Elizabeth Sherwood give us production help. Zeke's Coffee gives us our coffee. Clean Cuts Music gives us our theme song. And you give us the reason to be here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. I hope you'll be with us this coming Monday. Sheila welcomes actor Alan Alda to the show, and I'll speak with the award-winning author Raina Grande, the author of the book that's been chosen by the Maryland Humanities Council as this year's One Maryland, One Book selection. As always, you can learn more about what you've heard on Maryland Morning or catch something you've missed on our website. Come to WIPR.org/Maryland Morning. For Sheila Cast, I'm Tom Hall. Thanks for being with us. Have a great weekend.